Welcome to Guilty of Savings. I am Divya Gill, CPA, and today we are going to break down simple ways to save money and make smarter financial decisions. You're watching Now Media Television. Welcome to Guilty of Savings. I am Divya Gill, CPA, and today I want to talk about growth from a leadership perspective. In business, growth is exciting, but also comes with pressure. Market shifts, teams change, cash flow tightens, competition increases, and when the pressure rises, the quality of leadership starts showing up everywhere, in the numbers, in the culture, in the strategy, and in way people execute. My guest today is Dr. Deepak Bhutra, a global business leader with more than 30 years of experience driving growth, strategy, and transformation for Fortune 500 and multinational organizations. He has led cross-border teams, managed multi-million dollar portfolios, and built high-performance cultures across Asia, Africa, and North America. After decades in senior corporate leadership, Dr. Deepak shifted his focus to leadership, development, and human potential. He is an ICF-certified coach, Sandler-trained sales expert, author of Rise Up, Your Career Reclaimed, and the creator of Rise Up at Work. Dr. Deepak, welcome to Guilty of Savings.
Thank you, ma'am. I'm always happy to go to any place that has guilty of this, guilty of that. I'm here.
Sounds good. And it's a pleasure to have you on the show as we open up the episode by connecting leadership pressure with business performance. This segment should help entrepreneurs and business owners understand that growth requires more than ambition. It requires calm decision-making, strategic clarity, operational discipline, and leadership resilience. With that said, Dr. Bhutra, when a business is under pressure, what separates steady leaders from reactive leaders? And I'm curious to listen to your take on this, given that I see a mix of both in my practice.
So I look at, you know, pressure, there's multiple types of pressure. And any entrepreneur listening in would say, I'm always under pressure. What's unique about this question? When you're under pressure, steady pressure, the reality is that that's what I would just call business as usual.
Correct.
It's nothing unique about it.
Correct.
Let's talk about business unusual. We're on a show which has got guilty of savings money. Money is always on everyone's mind. When a business is under pressure, I have to assume, and the biggest pressure comes from when you start seeing your P&L coming under pressure, you start seeing your revenue sliding, you start seeing cash flow scenarios. Now, let's talk about what happens then. There's this old thing that, you know, our ancients told us about human beings, that we're very good at losing our minds when everything is going wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first tip that I'll give to anyone listening in right now, is that when you're a founder, an entrepreneur, when you're a leader, and the word leader is so profound, right? You didn't say manager, you said leader.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, leadership is not just only about hierarchy, but it's also about behavior. And you're a leader, you may have a middle management role, you have an impact on the numbers, and you understand that, you appreciate that. For me, clarity, control, consistency. These are the three C's that I always call upon. When you're under extreme pressure, when you see the numbers sliding, first thing you actually do is figure out what actually matters. And you know this, Divya, I sometimes get really surprised. People start taking decisions which have no impact on the P&L. People start and help you dial down, dial up, and it has an impact on revenue and so on. It's astounding. So get clarity. What are you going to do that actually matters versus what feels urgent right now? Urgency creates a lot of bad focus. Focus on that. The second thing is when I spoke about is control, right? That was the second C. And the control that I'm talking about is actually not a fiscal control. It's not about controlling your costs. It's actually about emotional regulation, because that's when things typically go wrong. You're reacting to something, right? And you need to do that from a place of anticipation, joy, not place of fear. Place of fear will always make you do the wrong things. The last thing that I'm talking about is consistency. I come from a sales background. Consistency means that you need to keep swinging at the ball irrespective of the pressure.
Absolutely.
Your consistency, if you were calling 10 people for cold calls to get 10 people to talk to you, carry on doing that. Do not course adjust because of minor small things, because these are what I call leading indicators. When you fail at the basics, they will ultimately become problematic later on. That's how I would answer your question, ma'am. Three C's. Clarity, control, and consistency.
And I love that. I love the fact that you gave it so clearly in terms of those three C's. And I also liked one thing, emotional regulation. I oftentimes see so many of our leaders, and it's important to see that distinction, like you said, between leaders and managers. It's easy to be a manager. I'm sure we can go on talking a lot about it, but then it's difficult to be a leader, right? And then the biggest differentiator is, in my opinion, emotional regulation. Which takes me into the next piece of things that says, how do these leaders make these smart decisions, especially these days, right? You look around you, the market is changing so quickly. The inflation is like out of hands. Things are all over the place, rising gas prices, tariffs, all that's happening today. How do leaders make sure that they're making the right decisions that affect the P&L in the right way and ultimately their pockets?
Here's the fun part, you know. I've always told people that I coach, consult with, that the biggest display is you're going to question, I give you simple answers. And the first thing I'm going to tell you, you're going to sit there, you're wondering, why did I get this guest on the call? Is that just stop, ask yourself a question. You mentioned tariffs, right? And is it temporary? Is it long-term? First assess that. When you know that it's a temporary mechanism, then the first thing you're going to do is realize that nothing has fundamentally changed.
Correct. That's a good point.
And when the fundamentals don't change, don't overreact. That course correction that you're going to do is going to be so bad, so it's like a knee-jerk reaction, right? So the first thing I tell people, and then they're suddenly like, oh, okay. Second thing that I can just call out is that, you know, there's this thing that people do, Divya, which is that they forget that basic human needs always remain. Your customers will still want something. There's still a value proposition that you need to position. So when the market is changing, look for things that are not changing and take energy from that. This way you can, so it's like strengths and weakness analysis, right? I have three strengths, I have three weaknesses. And people tell me, my gosh, what do I do with my weaknesses? What are the weaknesses? And I actually coach them. Use your strengths to mitigate your weaknesses. Go and identify things that are still working well for you, where you are strong. And I'll use those to respond to this, what you call a temporary situation in the marketplace, correct?
Yeah.
Now market is changing quickly. Reality is that with AI, things are going to get even worse for us, right? Things move very fast. Customers are evaluating in a different way. The last thing that I want to say to people is that when the market is changing quickly and you need to make growth decisions, one thing I give people is that look for the small wins first. When you get the small wins, analyze those wins and feed that information back into the feedback cycle. You will actually be surprised. People look for big wins. Don't look for big wins. Look for small wins. Small wins tell you that you are on the right track. But if you don't look for the small wins, you're looking for the big wins, you're actually going to realize that the big win never came because there were so many bad wins or losses along the way that you completely misjudged and missed out on. That's how I would kind of, you know, position this for you.
You know, I love that because we talked about the aspect that how this can also act as a signal. Their financial, their operational signals, and how those will indicate if the company needs transaction. And then how they could use the urgency to use that for long-term discipline. So how would that fit in into this particular topic?
I'm going to give you an answer that's going to make the CPO and you super excited. Start with the numbers first. Okay. Start with the numbers. I always tell people, you know, for coming from a sales background, the numbers will set you free. Look, if I stand on a scale and the scale tells me that my number seems to be 20% above the average, I can stand there just thinking that, I'm a big muscle guy. I'm a, you know, big bone guy. Or, exactly. But the reality is that what you inspect will always get your respect. So start with the numbers, margin pressure, inconsistent revenue, things like that, right? The second thing that I tell people is to look for behavior. And the behavior is very simple, very simple. Cultural signals we're talking about, right? Is people were used to doing something, but they now stopped doing it or doing something else. Why? They are being extremely, how do you say this, fuddy-duddy. Look for those execution gaps. Those execution gaps are going to pop up very quickly. What used to be a norm is now suddenly becoming tiring, or I don't want to do it. Why? Because it's difficult. I used to cold call 30 people, at least three people answer the call. Now I call 30, maybe one calls. Okay, let's understand, maybe the list is faulty, but you need to keep working it, right? Then comes the most important signal for me, energy. And the best example I can give you is, if you know when you walk into a room and you just feel that the conversation is all backwards looking, nothing forwards looking?
Yes.
You sit on a call and you actually see people off camera.
Yeah.
A group of people that used to chirp a lot, used to ask a lot of questions, are suddenly not there anymore. They've just disappeared. That's energy. And a lot of people don't understand that. And for me, the absence of energy means one simple thing, that there's low ownership, that there's confusion, people are all over the place, and disengagement. And you and I know, Divya, how important engagement is, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And this is why I tell people, your numbers, the behavior, the energy, these are the three misalignments that you need actively looking for. And when I'm in a review, I also look at the language. If the language is totally about, why did you not close the Roberts deal? Mm-hmm. Versus language which says, I believe you've been working very hard on the Roberts deal. How can I help you close it? Do you see the difference into one will proceed to lead to a meltdown or a shutdown?
Yeah,
but the second question is going to lean, someone's going to lean forward and say, this is where I need help.
Absolutely.
And that's how you move on to transformation.
I love that. And you have described so many different patterns, mindset changes and habits. Is there one particular habit that leaders should focus on when, especially during these times of uncertainty?
I'm going to give you an answer that's going to blow your mind. Self-care.
Oh, I love that.
Start with yourself first. Don't make that mistake. I've made that mistake so many times, Divya.
We all have. We all do. Yeah.
And because I think leaders forget one reality. They look at the word leader and they assume that there's my posse, my gang, my team. They need me. I got to be there for them. Mm-hmm. If that is true, then you need to act accordingly. I am a father. I have my two young sons on a flight with me, and I have my aged grandmother with me. Captain says, put your mask on first. We're going through turbulence. Then put the mask on the others. But I start fiddling with my old grandmother's mouth, and I look at my two infants.
Yep.
I pass out. What have I just done? I've put the life of four people at risk.
Right.
And this is something where initially when I was told and given this metaphor, I did not like it because it sounds so selfish, right, Divya? But here's the balancing contradiction to this. It's not selfish because self-care is not about self-preservation.
Right.
It's actually about the entire team surviving.
Right. And that is such an important foundation because pressure does not automatically create performance. You know, what we're looking for in pressure is looking for the system, the habits, and the leadership decisions that need to be enhanced, maybe addressed. But then I love the idea of closing the segment with the idea of self-care. You know, I cannot, I slack at that. There are times when I absolutely lose sight of that. And it's really important to take care of your own self before you can take care of the whole herd. So after the break, I want to talk about people as a growth strategy and why talent development should not be treated only as expense. We'll be right back. We'll be right back with more tips to help you save money, reduce taxes, and make your finances work for you. Stay tuned. And we are back. I am Divya Gill, CPA, and your host of Guilty of Savings on Now Media Television. Let's keep saving. Welcome back to Guilty of Savings. I am Divya Gill, CPA. Stay connected to the show and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or Apple and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. On the move, catch the podcast version at nowmedia.tv. I'm here with Dr. Deepak Bhutra, global business leader, ICF certified coach, Sandler trained sales expert, author of Rise Up, Your Career Reclaimed, and the creator of Rise Up at Work. Before the break, we talked about growth under pressure, what leaders need to do when markets, teams, business conditions are changing. And now let's talk about something that every owner and every executive has to understand. People are not just a cost line. People are people. People are a growth strategy. So the goal here is to guide this segment into the link between leadership development, team performance, and financial outcomes. The goal is to make the audience see talent development as a business investment that affects productivity, retention, execution, customer service, and ultimately profitability. So, Dr. Deepak, why should business owners see people development as part of growth strategy?
You know, I would love to give a canned response to that question.
Please do.
There's something been bothering me for a long time. Think about it, Divya. You open the newspaper and the first thing you say that there's an email that went out at 6 a.m. telling 30,000 people that thanks to AI, you will not have your job anymore.
Yeah.
And the very same company in its ads actually says that let AI free the human to be inhuman.
Yeah.
What is being human then? I mean, I don't understand because unfortunately where we are today, being human means that you also have an 8-to-5 job, right? Mm-hmm. You have to work so that you can put bread on the table. So now we have this unique situation where you've asked the $1 million question, but at the same time, a multi-billion-dollar corporation is saying we don't buy this argument anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I think this is where it becomes really, really interesting for us. For me, I've always said as follows. AI is giving you the illusion of savings because yes, it has a capability. For the first time, you have a tool that is actually cleaving the workforce straight down, not the lower level anymore.
Seriously.
It's cutting straight down.
That,
so, And by the way, the best cakes are sliced like that, right? Because you want to get all the layers into it. But we're not talking about food anymore. We're talking about human. Human capital. Now, as a CPA, you respect my frustration with finance. Human capital is a number that can never be captured on the balance sheet. We have tried and attempted this for the last 30 years. We use the word human capital, but it's never part of the equation. At 5 o'clock, when you walk into a building and when no one's around, you actually can't see a company anymore. But at 8 a.m. in the morning, when you see people around, then it's a company. So I've always said this to people as follows. There is a bit of a disruption in how we have defined this till now, and I respect that. But there are three levers that people have to remember is why you need to invest in people. Is that people actually bring true skills to the table. Mindset and AI will always remain neutral, but human beings will respond to the angst in the room, to the judgment in the room. And that will remain critical, particularly in sales, Divya.
Absolutely.
I mean, you're doing a tax resolution for a customer who's panicking off because he doesn't want to go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think an AI's response to that would be? You shouldn't have then not done your tax returns.
Yes.
Whereas you're going to say, can I get you a glass of water? Look. Mm-hmm. And I recall a conversation with you, Divya, where you actually gave a great example of, hey, you're not in a bad place. You are actually in a place where many find themselves in. So let's get rid of the guilt first and let's talk about how I can help you.
Absolutely.
And to me, that was a very profound judgment call you made that day. And I think it's a very important message I want to just share with everyone. People are not a cost line. You and I know that inherently, but certain actions by companies will give you the impression they don't care. My message is very simple. If people are not a cost line, then they have to be a performance line. And if they're a performance line, then they're part of your engine. And if they're an engine, it is your God-given duty to lubricate that engine, feed that engine so it runs constantly. So my faith in this statement is slightly shaken because of events around us. But I must admit, AI stands as the single destructive force that I've seen with the so much power to do good also that I'm actually two minds about it. Back to you, Divya.
But see, this is where I also think that the companies need to carefully identify what can be handled by tools that are existing out there, especially AI, and what systems can eliminate some jobs. But then they also need to find that fine balance, right? Where they need to invest in people. Because what happens when you see there's that lack of balance? I'm sure you work with a lot of clients who are in that situation. At least we're seeing a lot of our clients who are trying to make that tough call. Hey, I want to save on my bottom line. But then this person is important to the organization and the overall running of the organization. But then AI can offer me all of this. So what happens if people don't find that balance?
It's a million-dollar question, right? The same company that is trying to find fiscal balance is creating a disimbalance by dropping those people off board, right?
Sure.
The reality is that for me, leadership development will always have a challenge, Divya. It's always going to have a challenge. Leadership development is also two ways to it, right? Leadership development is not just about the leader's development, but it's also about the followers that need to be developed. And I think there's a challenge in that one. I don't have a clean answer for you, but I do know one thing. If you do not grow people, and let's take the classic scenario, when the market is down, salespeople are typically let go. When the market starts coming up, the companies that actually deliver the worst results are the ones that actually were very fast to dump the salesperson.
Yes.
Because and I'll tell you the secret why. There's so much research behind this, but I'm going to give you a $1 billion secret right now, Divya. When companies are down and there's no one to sell to, a top-notch salesperson doesn't sit there doing nothing. He actually goes and starts keeping those accounts warm by telling them about tell me about your problems, what's happening. What would you do when we were to come out from this? Tell me what your plans are. And he's actually nurturing, guiding, directing, most likely seeding thoughts that lead to something so unique in an RFP that only his company can respond to. And this is something that people, you know, there's this old saying, again, the ancients have given us so much joy with the stuff they told us, right?
Mm-hmm.
You plant your seeds at certain times. There's a reason for that. At that certain time when you should be planting a seed, yes, an economy has turned and you are now throwing people off. But when that economy comes back, those who did not throw off and kept sowing are going to reap faster than those who dumped. There is your economic challenge right there. So figure it out, ladies and gentlemen. I always tell companies, and I used to tell this to my people, in my career, I've had to say goodbye to 55 people, right? And all 55 keep in touch with me. And they tell me one thing, Deepak, the way you did it is you maintained our dignity. Today, my call, and I just digression slightly on this, is that if you do have a situation where you need to get rid of people, do it with such immense dignity that when the tide turns and when you are bringing people back on board, they will cherish and they will call you to say to you, if you, everything is okay, I'd love to come back to work for you again.
Yeah.
And I would love for people to think about that, because when you are thinking like that, you will drop people for only at the last tail moment, but you'll also hire people very slowly also, because you want to make sure you preserve the ability for a company to react to ups and downs too quickly to dump. Run a tight ship, run a ship that's maybe at 95% of your OPEX. Keep that 5%. Don't try to overspend it. And I think that's the biggest challenge. Companies grow like crazy, companies hire like crazy, but then they dump like crazy because they have no culture either ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there, you talked about the leaders versus followers, and you need a balance of both, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like you just gave phenomenal examples in time how salespeople are the first ones to be gone. And absolutely, done with grace, something my mentors used to teach me. You know, any hard decision taken with grace and executed with grace, you will end up fine and you'll end up right and do right to people. Because then you leave that little window open for them to make a comeback if you need them back in your company at that point. Which is my next question, that how do leaders identify? This is a very tough question, right? How do they sit there and identify who's a leader, who's a follower? How, what do I invest in when it comes to hidden potential inside the team? How do I tap into that?
Okay, wait. So much going on there. Potential, leadership, talent, right? So I'm a leader. People ask me, what's the first job of a leader? It's actually to develop more leaders.
Agreed.
It sounds absolutely weird, but I can tell you one thing. It's like, if you live your life by the 10 commandments, it makes a lot of things easy for you later, Deepak. I didn't understand that statement. That was quite right. If you simplify the rules, as a leader, I need to develop other leaders. So therefore, my frame of reference, every action I do is going to change. It's absolutely going to change, right? So what do I typically do is that? First, identifying future leaders requires you to identify current potential. And to identify current potential, you need to apply a different lens. A lot of companies do this one smart thing, you know, that they're going to start looking at how someone does the job today and in that fitment. And the first thing they say is, he does this job so well that I'm never going to promote him or let him leave that job.
I've heard
and
that before.
And this then becomes a vicious, mm-hmm. vicious situation. Mm-hmm. So I always tell leaders to do a couple of things. One is, when dealing with an individual that's exceptional at their job, ask a very simple question. Does this guy do an exceptional job because he's constantly curious? As a in the sales organizations, we always used to say that, you know, a professional salesperson is actually someone who acts like a novice on intention by asking curiosity, basic questions, which are always open-ended. And that's a mouthful. But if you're looking for leaders, look for leaders that are always questioning the status quo, leaders that keep questioning their own ability to deliver. And because of the curiosity, they also want to keep learning. And curiosity also means that they want to keep doing new stuff. Create a scale and then rate your people on curiosity. You will enjoy that experience. Next thing is ownership. Ownership, Divya, is so critical, right? Accountability matters. You need to find people that when they say they will do something, they will do it. Mm-hmm. So look for someone like that. Create a scale. Create a scale of 10 times I asked this person for something and only delivered 6 or delivered 8, delivered 10. The higher that they are on ownership, those are the right candidates.
I love
the
that.
Third thing that I'll throw at you is coachability. Mm-hmm. Can this person be shaped? If I were to invest my time in this individual, will he give me, really reciprocate back with an open mindset? Does he have a growth mindset, as Carol Dweck would say, right? Now, when I was very young, I used to believe in all of this stuff in a very academic way. But over the course of time, I've actually seen the power that it can be unleashed when it's used in a very structured, methodical intentionality at the core. That's the best way to explain it from my point of view, right? How do you do this then, Deepak? Well, give them work. Give them work that stretches them. Give them work that allows them to talk to you and coach them and show them. Tell them what you would consider, then tell them what would you add to it. When you take a 2+2=5 type of approach to things, you'll be amazed how quickly you can start identifying this, what you call hidden potential amongst teams, right?
Right.
And you know why it remains hidden? It remains hidden because the leader didn't do his job of asking. Come home. My wife has a very long face. I can choose to ignore that. I can choose to ask a few probing questions.
Right. No, I totally agree with that. And those are some of the ways that people can build high performance cultures, right? I love this because the numbers are often downstream from the people. When teams are unclear, they're unsupported, misaligned, and the whole idea that why is the leader not picking up on the potential because he's not challenging them to display what they can offer, right? Yeah,
absolutely.
So the businesses feel it's financial, that they'll feel it financially. They'll feel it in all of its shape and forms in terms of performance. So when leaders develop people with intention, they create better execution, stronger culture, substantial performance measures as well are put in place that help the business grow. But at the same time, these leaders, to your point, Dr. Bhutra, are creating leaders. So coming up next, I want to explore transformation, my favorite topic, how leaders guide change without creating chaos. We'll be back. We'll be right back with more tips to help you save money, reduce taxes, and make your finances work for you. Stay tuned. And we are back. I am Divya Gill, CPA, and your host of Guilty of Savings on Now Media Television. Let's keep saving. Welcome back to Guilty of Savings. This is Divya Gill, CPA, and today I'm speaking with Dr. Deepak Bhutra about leadership, growth, transformation, and the human side of sustainable business performance. We've talked about pressure and people. Now we should be talking about an important topic, change. Because every business eventually reaches a point where they have to change. Like they say, change is inevitable. The question is whether the leader can guide transformation with clarity instead of chaos. The goal here of the segment is to explore how leaders manage change, restructuring, market shifts, and business transformation. Dr. Deepak Bhutra can speak from experience leading organizations through high-pressure environments. The focus should be practical, communication, trust, priorities, decision-making, and how to keep people aligned when the business is evolving. So Dr. Deepak, why do many transformation efforts fail inside companies? And I am so curious to know your take on this.
Let's start with a simpler thing first. You know, companies are complex animals. Let's ask everyone listening in right now, how many transformation efforts have you tried at your own level other than individual that have failed? You'll be surprised, more than two-thirds. I wake up in January and I say, this time I'm going to make a difference. 20 pounds down, baby, by June. By June, I'm actually 5 pounds heavier because along the way, Shipley's had a sale. Walmart was giving, buy two rotisserie chickens, get the third free, and we just lose our way in life, right?
Yep.
Now, let's magnify this. And your question is on fail inside companies. Transformation fails because I've realized one thing, very simple. Leaders are an interesting animal, right? Is that when they start, how do you say this, looking at strategy as something to be executed, whereas strategy is something that actually requires behavioral change, and they forget that. And when you talk about behavioral change, it's simply about change management, Divya. There's this little trick that I've learned in my life. People are not scared of change. People are scared of uncertainty. Mm-hmm. They know they have to change. They know they're going to get old. But what they don't know is that as I get old, will I have enough money to retire? Will my health fail me? Will my kids love me? That uncertainty is what gives us sleepless nights. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. So now comes the question. If uncertainty gives you sleepless nights, then as a leader, what do you need to do about it? Very simple then. You need to explain to people the why behind the change. That's clarity. Just give it to them. Number one principle. Because we focus not anymore on the simple stuff. We focus on uncertainty. It's not change anymore. Leaders are not consistent in the message or the direction they give. Can you imagine Monday morning he comes and says, guys, we've had the market going down, we decided to go this way. 2 days later, guys, we saw some more data, we're changing our minds, we're not going to go this way. And I've always told them, when you do that, you take the sanctity of the process away. People don't trust your judgment anymore because when you walk into a room on Friday and say, guys, someone from the back is going to say, oh, we just realized we made another mistake, we need to go this way. And you stand there like, who was that? How dare you, sir? How dare you? Well, what dare you? You started it, I'm ending it. That's the reality. Alignment is critical. Leaders miss that. Last thing is that, and this is going to be really, really funny. Adoption. They don't change their own habits. They still try to do things that used to work. They still talk in abstract terms. They don't talk about specific stuff. Acknowledge, show some vulnerability, Divya, and I think this is extremely critical. When you are trying to do transformation, the effort fails because of lack of change management, lack of clarity, but also because people are not realizing that leadership needs to understand. They need to say, and here's a trick that I can teach any leader that's here. When I say trick, it's not something that you do to fool people. Acknowledge where you are first. Be vulnerable and tell them that, look, ladies and gentlemen, I'm as bothered by this as you are. But I have access to information and I have been talking to figure out a way to make it easy for all of us. Why only you? It's all of us, right? That language changes things quite a lot, because suddenly you're not on against anyone, you're actually with them. And when you are with someone, they will always protect you as well as they protect themselves.
You know, I love the distinction you made, and there are a few things you touched in this that covered multiple topics: change versus uncertainty. I never thought of it that way, because I equate change with uncertainty, but it doesn't have to be uncertain. It doesn't have to create that chaos. The message I'm getting here is, if you can manage it well, manage people, their expectations, and what to anticipate, and not change every day, but change would come with clarity and consistency, is the message that our viewers need to take from this. Which would then take me into my next question, that what role does trust play? Because we're talking people. Goes back to our second segment here, you know, when it comes to restructuring, growth mandates, market shifts. I'm sure you have had situations where people are getting acquired by a private equity firm, as an example, and the entire top management shifts and people are uncertain. What do you see critical when it comes to the trust aspect here?
Trust is an interesting topic, Divya. You know, so on one hand, people tell me, hey, Deepak, you just told us that followership makes leadership. And as a leader, you have to actually create an environment where followers are willing to be led by you. You cannot drag people with you, because if you're dragging people with you, then you're being a manager and you're using hierarchical influence and coercive power, right? As we put it.
Interesting.
Now, this makes it very interesting. So the question is then, wait. So that's not trust. Then what is trust? Trust has to be earned. Trust is never given. And to earn trust, your actions cannot be just one night, two night, three night. It has to be a consistent set of actions. One of the best ways to explain this is that, you know, Divya, a lot of men on this call will tell their wives, Valentine's Day, babe, flowers, chocolate, dinner. Well, God said to me, I'm going to destroy your life, Deepak. And what he did was he gave me my son. My eldest son was born on Valentine's Day. So now we have this problem in my family. Celebrate his birthday, celebrate Valentine's Day. So my poor wife has not gone out on a Valentine's date for a very long time. But the decision not to go out on Valentine's Day was made even before my son was conceived, ma'am. Because my wife made it very clear to me, you will not get the opportunity or the right to work with me very differently on a certain day, but on the rest of the year, you do things which are unforgivable. And now you expect me that a box of chocolates will make up for that.
I'm with you on this with your wife.
I learned a valuable lesson. So and valuable. I think I appreciate what she said to me. You cannot be untrustworthy 364 days. Yep. And when things are going bad, you suddenly ask people to trust you. Why would people trust you? Trust is earned. You got to earn it. And that is why it's so important. I look at it this way, you know, in chemical experiments, they say that, you know, I have five things, but Deepak, I'm not getting an explosion. And someone says, oh, you need to add that ingredient. And when you put that ingredient, you will get kaboom. So the guy says, oh, to me, that's trust. If you want to see your efforts accelerate, trust. People need to say, you know what? I trust his judgment. This guy would never ask me to do something that he himself would never do. That's leadership right there. So that's how I would treat trust. For me, trust is that little catalyst, that little ingredient that you put in. Think of it as a variable that causes an explosion, but in a positive way, right?
Yeah.
And the only way you can get trust, and this is, Divya, very critical for leaders, because I spend a lot of time on mental health of leaders. I've gone through my own twists and challenges, right? In life, you work. At some point, your facade has to drop. That's when you realize how much you carry in you. And trust comes from three things. One, being honest with yourself and being honest with your team. Consistency, and very importantly, man, being visible to the team. When SHIT is going down, and when stuff is going down, your presence, your ability to give shoulders to people's ambition as well as their frustration is what's going to establish you. And that's, trust is not something easy. And I've always said this to people, you can have the best McKinsey analysis done, but if people do not trust you, the leader, they're not going to deploy. They're not going to accept change. Why should I accept change for that guy? I don't trust him. I think he's trying to do this. I think he's going to take all our knowledge and give it to an AI who's going to take our jobs anyway. Wow. And in an age of AI, it's even more critical that people trust you.
Absolutely. And, you know, at this point, we've talked about communication. We have talked about trust, priorities, decision making. You're giving all this ammunition, I would say, tools, right, to the leaders to decide. Okay, you have to do all of this. But now, if a client is sitting with me, he'll say, Divya, I'm overwhelmed. What do I preserve? What do I change immediately? Where from here? So if you were to tie this into our question of, you know, how do I decide what to change, what to preserve, and also what would be my first step towards that transformation when I'm stuck? Help me. What do you recommend?
There's one thing that you should never let people allow to impact to themselves or to yourself, and that's your identity, your self-worth.
Good point.
When you are going through massive change, people's value systems change. People start looking at the chaos around them, and instead of understanding that the chaos is happening to their role, not to them. So in sales, we typically say as follows, Divya, I lost the deal. I feel like, you know, really horrible. Let's get out of it fast, because you lost the deal as a salesperson. But as a human being, do you feel you did what you had to do? Yes. Have you learned from those? Yes. Will you do something different next time? Yes. So then on a scale of 1 to 10, as a human being, you always remain a 10. In your role, you're down to a 3, you roll down to a 4. And I think this is where the problem with human beings is we conflate our role with our identity. And the second you do that, you are as good as saying, instead of someone driving the car over you, you actually lie down and you let your own car roll over you. I know it sounds horrible and horrific, but that's what I would say to you. And there's another thing that I always tell to people, that if you want to serve growth, right, one of the things that you need to preserve is there are certain values that helped you before, right, Divya?
Yeah.
So we have a crisis. Are those values gone?
No.
No, it's your refuge. Find that. Those are what I call the islands in the storm, where there's a little vantage point. And if you think about all the movies you've seen, a guy hanging on a pole, a little dog in a swollen river standing on a rock, that's what you need to do. You need to find that vantage point that is not just soothing your soul, but actually giving you physical opportunity to recover.
You know,
sorry, bit of a digression there.
No, I love that. The whole idea of finding the vantage point, because that's such a powerful reminder that transformation is not just a pen and paper. Let's get ready and let's start writing. It's more strategic. That's what I'm hearing here. It's a leadership thought process put in place. It's about people understanding where the business is going, the direction of the business, why this change matters, what's important, who needs to be the companions through this journey, and how everybody's role will connect to each other and lead to the outcome that they want, which is important and the most practical way to handle so that there is less confusion, less chaos, and change. So that's what makes change, that will make the change happen. So when we come back, I want to bring this to sales discipline, sustainable revenue, and the broader mission behind Rise Up at Work. We'll be back. We'll be right back with more tips to help you save money, reduce taxes, and make your finances work for you. Stay tuned. And we are back. I am Divya Gill, CPA, and your host of Guilty of Savings on Now Media Television. Let's keep saving. Welcome back to Guilty of Savings. Stay connected to the show and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or Apple and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. On the move, catch the podcast version at nowmedia.tv. I'm back with Dr. Deepak Bhutra, global business leader, ICF certified coach, Sandler trained sales expert, author of Rise Up, Your Career Reclaimed, and the creator of Rise Up at Work. We have talked about growth under pressure. We have talked about people and how to develop the people. We've talked about transformation in workplace. We've talked about change. Now, Dr. Bhutra, let's talk about what brings sustainable revenue, leadership resilience, and let's also talk about the mission behind Rise Up at Work. We'll close this segment and the episode by connecting sales discipline, leadership development, and career ownership to financial growth. This segment will help our viewers, hopefully, to understand that sustainable performance requires strong revenue systems, resilient leadership, and people who can reclaim clarity in their roles and in their future. So, Dr. Deepak, as a Sandler-trained sales expert, what do you believe business owners misunderstand about sales?
It's the most easiest question on the planet. Every time I tell them, give me an example of bad selling, they always talk about a furniture salesperson or a used car salesperson. And I stand there in utter awe of what just happened. Cliches upon cliches upon cliches. So the first thing I want to say to business owners is I want you to rise above. You have an idea. Your idea is not going to sell itself because you say it's good. You have to position it by responding to what the customer is needing. And to do that, you need to do proper conversation and discovery. And the biggest problem that founders do, or you know, business owners do, that they think they actually have solved something very precious, something very powerful, and that if I build it, they will come. That was an awesome movie. And Divya, that's not how real life works. You know that, right?
Yes. Agree.
Just because you have CPA written on your front door, it tells people what you do, but it doesn't tell people what problem of theirs specifically can you solve.
Yes.
They want to meet you. They still want to talk to you. So the biggest conception is that examples of selling tells them they think that sales is about persuasion. It's not. Sales is a disciplined process. It's about finding a pain that only you can solve. And if you solve that pain to that person's satisfaction, you then get paid for the value that person gets from that satisfaction.
Yep.
Some customers will give you $1. Some may give you $3. It's you who needs to figure out how you're going to do that, right?
Yep.
For me, when I talk to this, in fact, I actually have a program that I talk about. It's the 7 myths. And the biggest myth that people have is that my product will sell itself. I'm sorry, it just won't. It just won't. You have to. You need to also understand one thing, Divya. Founders, business owners are very bad at follow-up because they feel that they are disrupting someone's life. No. Human nature requires follow-ups. We ourselves, our friend mom tells us, hey, Deepak, pick up eggs on the way back. And you come home and she said, did you get the eggs? Ah, oh, ma, okay, I'll go get it now. We do that, right? Mom tells you to clean your car. Wife tells you to do this, do that. You need constant reminders. Would you please get a screwdriver and do this? We as human beings are not hotwired all the time to be right, you know, doing. So what makes you think that when you're trying to sell? And the last thing I'll share with you, ma'am, is that whatever urgency you have to sell is not the urgency that he needs to buy. That frequency never, never, never meets. And here's the dilemma. People assume that just because, Divya, I said something awesome and I feel that my words were awesome and you smile, you're not going to get the deal, buddy. You're not going to get the deal, buddy.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know if you ever saw that Avis ad where the guy says, I think I've met the love of my life. And the guy says, who? He says, come with me. And he's got a bouquet of flowers. He walks her to the Avis counter. And the Avis lady is telling everyone, good day, sir. How can I help you? And
I remember that.
You remember that?
Yep.
And he looks at it and he said, but she smiled at me. He says, she smiles at everyone, man.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I'm trying to say here. You need to build relationships. That's how I would answer your question, ma'am. Apologies.
No, please do not apologize. I love the way you touch so many different things again. And this is, I believe this is your thing that you do. You touch all these different topics and it makes me think of my clients. I'm digressing a little, but it makes me think of my clients where I'm sitting there, they share a tax problem with me. And as a second generation, I've been raised to not sell. What that means is, you know, listen to the person, listen to the client. They are people at the end of the day. And if they need something, propose that, recommend that. If they take it or not, it comes back to your question or your statement you made. Your priority is not my priority. You know, if they'll need it, they see value in it, they'll take it. Which takes you to that sales discipline that comes through it, right? How do you connect that sales discipline to long-term financial health?
Yeah. So how do you do that? Very simple. Cash flow. Divya, 90% of entrepreneurs and founders go belly up, not because they had a bad product, it's because they could not sell that product. And because they could not sell that product, they ran out of cash flow.
Mm.
Now, of course, sometimes you're busy building a product, you never get to selling it, but then that tells you that something's wrong. Because if you're building a product that you can't sell, then you've anyway burnt bridges. So that's what I try to tell people. Sales discipline is not just about, right? And the way to make sure that you can make revenue predictable or long-term financial health is making sure that one, spend time on things that matter.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking to 20 customers to get all 20 to be qualified in the pipeline is not right. And I would highly recommend just shoot yourself before you get shot later and have to file for bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. Be very, very careful about that. Aggressive words, my apologies for that. But pipeline quality is very critical. Really put stuff in there that matters. It's like, and I know this metaphor may not go down very well, but you walk into a bar and you see 10 women standing there and you are now drunk and you look at your friend and say, buddy, I see my wife there. And then the next day, your buddy says, did you find your wife? He's like, no, I think I was too drunk. Just because you see 10 people standing doesn't give you opportunity. That's not how it works. So unfortunately, in his CRM, he went and wrote, met 10 women and he put down 10 names. That's not a list. That's a fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing here? And now it gets interrogation, right? So I've always said this. One tip I can give you right now. Best sales discipline, strong qualification process will ensure that you do not waste time on what I call poor fit. That's it. Stop. put on a t-shirt and wear the t-shirt every day.
Okay.
Rather, in my English, we say as follows, qualify slow to exit fast.
I like that. I like that. And have you seen there are certain kind of mistakes that create inconsistent revenue inside a business?
Yeah. Look, honestly, taking on business at a price that delivers to you a mangled result on the P&L happens all the time.
Mm.
I personally, when I became an entrepreneur, the first six opportunities I took, I did them for free. Divya, can you believe it if I tell you that this smart man that sits in front of you bragging, talking so much, did those six, but none of them actually renewed their contracts or gave me more work?
Interesting.
I ended up in a very bad negative scenario.
Okay.
But the good news is that they all enjoyed the work I did. So I got three references and three referrals from that.
That's a win.
That was a win.
Yeah.
But the reality is that I could afford that because I know how to do my finances and because I just started. So I did that. But if it's anyone listening, all I'm saying is that if you want to avoid inconsistent revenue, then develop consistent habits. What you did last month may not be what works this month. Keep an eye on that. My early behavior was to get momentum because I know myself. I take motivation from work and results rather than motivation for making money.
Mm.
So I use that to my advantage. So I would tell you that if you're making, you know, if you want to eliminate inconsistent revenue, and this is the typical feast versus famine mode, right? Figure it out. To be honest with you, it's most usually, I have a simple sandal rule that we talk about. If you're trying to make sure you want to get consistency, you always make sure that you identify whether there's a real opportunity or not, and that every conversation you end with the next step.
I love that. You know, we've talked about a variety of topics here, which brings me to question you, what inspired your book, Rise Up, Your Career Reclaimed, and the work you're doing through Rise Up at Work? And, you know, tell us a little more about it. What does it mean to rise up in leadership, performance, and purpose?
1.5K, 1,500 people that I've coached in the last 15 years, and I have learned a lot from those individuals. I converted all of that work into a 30 framework. It's a story about a group of individuals working on a global project, and we use that as a way to teach and highlight. The book was designed as a self-service guide for people to figure out themselves. Along the way, a lot of people kept telling me, people don't read 500-page books anymore, Deepak. And you are so good at explaining things to people. Why can't you do something bigger? I then also had my own tryst with mental health, my own, you know, burnout situations at job. And I said, hey, hold on. Then my two sons, Devia, 21-year-olds calling me from work, Dad, this happened. Dad, that happened. And I said to myself, 34 years ago, I used to call my dad and he used to yap about the same stuff. What's going on? Are you telling me that in 30 years, we've not got to a point where we can understand discipline? Boom, that's a business opportunity right there. What was missing was that a lot of people thought that LinkedIn is about careers, right? LinkedIn is actually about career identity. It allows people to know who you are. But if you're looking at career progression, then you have coaching, Divya. Coaching is expensive. A 21-year-old earning an X amount of dollars is being told to give $100 or $200 an hour for a 30-hour package. He's going to say no.
Mm-hmm.
And they shouldn't be saying no because that's exactly what's going to save you. Now with AI, the opportunity that I'm trying to close is as follows. AI can actually allow you to understand yourself better. Self-journaling is now faster and smoother because you can talk to someone as well. That person can now start looking at your resume, look at job opportunities, the way you're responding to the universe, as well as your inner thoughts about how you deal with your manager. Put all that together, you now have a very powerful career progression platform, and that's RiseUp. And the RiseUp is R-I-S-E-U-P, and Divya, that's a six-letter acronym that actually is a framework. That's it. So the framework is what converted into diagnostics. Diagnostics converted into a platform that allows you to do resumes, blah, 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 put it together. Now have an AI architecture that actually gives me the ability to create a flywheel for you.
Dr. Deepak, this has been such a valuable conversation because you remind us that sustainable growth is never just about strategy on paper. It's about people, leadership, discipline, trust, and the ability to keep developing human potential, even when the business environment is changing. What I hope viewers take away from this is if we want stronger financial performance, we have to look at the leadership behind the numbers. We have to look at how people are developed. We have to see how change is communicated, how sales are disciplined, and how purpose is connected to performance. And then, of course, we have your book that people should buy a copy of and refer to as and when crises happen, right?
Amazon and beckons.
There you go. And if people were to reach you, how would they go about doing that?
Same thing. Just shout my name out on LinkedIn, Deepak Bhutra. I'm the only Deepak Bhutra because other Deepak Bhutras got 666, 999 and stuff like that. You reach out to me that way. You'll find me. Drop me a DM. I'm at your service.
Sounds wonderful. Thank you for joining me on Guilty of Savings. And to everyone watching, keep building businesses where strategy and poor people are moving together. I am Divya Gill, CPA. And until next time on Guilty on Savings, see you again. Bye now.